Everyone, welcome back. And you just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, me, Richard Lannan. And we're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, your career, or life. And now, how are we going to do that? Well, you know already, chatting to one person at a time to uncover their lives, people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes to help you create the success that you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. Everybody deserves to be successful in life. You know what time it is? It's that Set for Success quote time. You can design and create and build the most wonderful place in the world, but it takes people to make a dream a reality. That was from Walt Disney. It's one of my favorite Walt Disney quotes actually. Now, if you don't know who Walt Disney is, I hope you do know who he is, but he was an American entrepreneur, animator, voice actor, and film producer, a pioneer of the American animation industry, and he introduced several developments in the productions of cartoons. And of course, you might actually know him far more better for Disney World, Disneyland, places like that. But he did create places that are of their own reality. And I guess you can say that reality is what where you live or is in term of everyday life. And maybe reality is what you're doing right now at this moment. This is maybe your reality. In today's world, reality is changing with artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and augmented reality. These are things that are shaping how and where we do our work and how we can learn and play and just recreate if we choose to do so. I think Walt Disney and people like him are visionaries and have created a world where we have an altered place or world in which we can dwell. And for Disney, it was the world that was brought together with cartoon characters and the use of animatronics. There's a word for you, animatronics, and creating a place where people could go and become part of the environment. Today, with virtual reality, we really don't need to even go anywhere. We can do virtual reality in our own living room or in other places. And it actually doesn't take much in the way of technology any longer to create that world. Now, if you've listened to my shows before, you know that I've talked about my son, Alex, and he's created his own virtual reality technology in our own house. And I know that you can do the same thing, too. But from a personal and business perspective, what is happening in VR, AR, and even the 3D world today, or in 3D printing, for example, just one of those things that fascinates me, but I know very little about. But what is happening in those worlds that are impacting your reality of tomorrow? And this is when my guest comes in, because when I want to talk or chat technology and the changes in our reality, I like to reach out and chat with Daniel Blair. And if you don't know who Daniel is, I think you should. He's a VR, AR developer, author, entrepreneur, TEDx speaker, and he tends to have his pulse on the situation. Daniel.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know. It's always awesome. You know, whenever you come on with me, we almost have like a pre-interview before or discussion before we even get started in our actual discussion.
I'd call it more of a like a pre-rant. We just go off in a random direction.
But that's why you like hanging out with me.
Yes.
You get to have these random conversations about things.
We foolishly set up the show where it's like, we're going to talk about this, this, and this. And it never goes along that way.
Never goes that way. Well, you know, the best laid plans, whatever the rest of that expression is. You know, I always like to get an update. You've been on the show before. You have a company called BitSpace, and you're known in the, I'm going to say the technology community in our province and in other parts of Canada, maybe the world now. But what's happening in your space these days?
Well, we've been very busy at BitSpace. Since the last time we've been on your show, we've hired multiple positions. We're growing. We have quite a few job postings up on the site right now. We're looking to grow our sales team. One of the things that in our discussions, just, you know, even trying to set up this show, I've been traveling like crazy. You happen to catch me between sales trips. So I just returned from Toronto. I'm off to Halifax right after this. So as a small Winnipeg company, we've been really growing in regards to sales in other provinces and in the US.
So what do you say? What do you think is driving that?
I think that for us, and I'm going to just jump back before
we're jumping too far ahead.
Right now we're living in the now, but like we'll talk about when we started the company. So I started the company in 2015.
Slow down. That's good. We got
the first VR headset that we worked with was the Oculus DK2, which stands for Development Kit 2. I had the DK1, but it was never commercially ready. I've never built anything for it. Our core product was for the Google Cardboard, which used your cell phone and a cardboard box. And I said, hey, we can bring you VR to your company.
Yeah, virtual reality.
Bring virtual reality to your company. And that was the hardest sell I could have ever imagined. People say it's hard to sell things in Winnipeg. You know what's especially hard to sell in Winnipeg is virtual reality when it was first coming out. We managed to survive that, mostly by doing good work. But now with the technology advancing, the price of VR coming down.
Oh gosh, amazing!
The price of computers coming down. What was a high end computer when we got started is now low mid range. So what used to be a $1,000 computer to run these things, you're able to buy for $400 or $500, and a $1,400 VR headset now costs you $600 to $700. So from a business perspective, a lot of our clients are able to actually purchase the hardware that they need to run the software. And I think that because the cost has been coming down, it has allowed us to really justify why you would want to enhance your training or your experience in the training facilities, which is the bulk of what we do.
Yeah. So. Maybe that's where we can just sort of jam on a little bit, is that, you've taken the whole technology, virtual reality technology and augmented reality technology, and really tune it into creating programs, training programs for businesses.
Yeah. So it's really like, I'm the kind of guy that just gets excited about technology.
You do.
And, VR, AR, that's, the core of the business that we ended up creating. However, as you know, I love everything. I fly my drones, I 3D print, I do all those things. For me, what was especially challenging to get started was when we started the company, we just said we did VR. What it took us a long time to figure out was those niches. We do VR for this. We solve this problem.
Yes.
And it took us a long time. So like you said, we use VR and AR to solve a specific problem, which is training and hazard identification, general awareness. We use it to enhance a training facility. We use it to build very specific software for companies that solve an actual problem, not just a gimmick for businesses.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's probably one of the key differences. Now, this has taken you on a lot of travel that you're saying, and you mentioned, it's interesting, you say you're going on a lot of sales trips. I don't see you as a sales guy. I mean, I see you as a tech guy, but tell us a little bit about that.
I'm a software developer.
You're a software developer.
And maybe this is true for a lot of your listeners, but, when I started the company, I was like, I can develop software. I will be able to figure everything else out. That was the biggest learning curve ever. I had to learn how to sell things. I had to learn how to be the face of a business and how to work with a client. I think I'm getting pretty good at it. We are, of course, growing the sales team right now, so I'm looking for people who are very good at it.
Yeah.
But we've been lucky in the past year or so that we've started to grow our name. We've started to become more well-known for what we do, and that does take me out of province a fair amount. So speaking at conferences and going to speak at businesses about what we do.
Okay, so with that thought in mind, growing your business and getting known, maybe we'll come back in with that sort of thinking in our next segment, and we'll touch on what's actually happening new in the technology world, or in your technology world. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Daniel Blair of Bitspace. And Dan, do you mind if I call you Dan or Daniel? What's your preference?
I'd prefer you call me whatever you feel comfortable calling me.
Daniel's fine. Hey, you. I like you enough that I'll just call you Hey, you. Daniel, we were talking a little bit about your business and I guess some of the challenges you're having and just getting it focused, especially you mentioned during the break that you'd like to say some stuff to the listeners about, just the challenges of creating your own company. And you and I have gotten together and you've been on the show before. We've talked about technology and talked about business growth, but just the whole space you're in now and how it's changing, what challenges you've had to overcome.
Yeah. So, I mean, being on the show a few times, I've been talking to you at a few different stages of where we've been at. We're still categorized as a startup. The business was started about 4 years ago and we are currently going through a growth phase, which means that we're trying to figure out how do we go from being a 10-person company to being a 30-person company in the next year. Well, that feels as challenging as going from a 1-person company to hiring your first employee and then going from your 2-person company to your 10-person company.
So,
finding the right people to be on the bus with you while you're starting the company. So for me, finding the people that can solve the problems alongside me. So people who are going to take ownership over what they're creating. It's finding those people that are going to help you solve those problems. And then streamlining what you're creating. So there's been two major challenges for me at Bitspace. And one was finding our identity. So who are we? And what do we stand for as a company? And the second thing is, what do we actually solve? So in previous incarnations of the company, and not a lot of people know this, but our logo is a first draft. Okay. We literally made a first draft logo, tossed it up on the website. Good enough.
Yeah,
and
way to go.
It's only recently that we've started re-looking at it, like just like thinking, does the logo say what we do?
Yeah.
And we have the sub brands that are the products and stuff like that, but it took us a long time to figure out that we're not just a VR company. We solve these problems. So when a company comes to us and say, I want to build X and it doesn't fit in with what we do, we know where to send them. We know, we aren't going to be able to solve that problem for you because we've specialized into these things.
Yes.
And I think that that's important for people who are thinking of starting a business or they have a business and they want to grow it, because if you try to just do everything, you're going to master nothing. And so what we did is we really focused on the problems that we know we can solve with a client base that we know exists for us. So we didn't just like blindly shoot into the dark and think we're going to solve this thing. No, we had built connections and we knew from previous projects that this market existed. So we targeted it. But it is far from the only market that we could have targeted. And then the second thing was like, who are we and what do we stand for? So I tell a lot of people that I don't build technology for the sake of building technology. I build things that legitimately should exist. So if someone comes to me and says, I want to build a product that does this, I will first ask them why. What problem is it solving? And this happened as recently as yesterday, where someone came in and they wanted to build a piece of a VR piece of software, and it to me felt a little too gimmicky. Well, I'm not just going to take someone's money because it is going to be cash flow. I want it to be a problem that we're actually solving, which might hurt in the short term, where it's like, oh, we're not going to get a project out of that. But I think it's going to benefit long term, where we're building trust with people because we're not building things that just shouldn't exist, which I think is a huge problem for a lot of like early companies that are just doing things to stay alive.
Yeah, they're just trying to keep the lights on and pay the bills and everything. I had a mentor of mine, actually one of my first bosses, when I first started my career off at 25. I'm not talking about job, I'm talking about career. And the lesson I learned there was to make a deal, you need to be able to walk away from a deal. And that statement, Daniel, meant so much in many different levels. It wasn't always about the negotiation of everything. Sometimes you just recognize that this is not a problem that you should be solving, and that there's another opportunity that's going to present itself around the corner. So you're best not to do it.
Yeah, if you end up locking yourself into a project that isn't what you want to be doing, you're going to lose out on opportunities that actually fit in with what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense indeed. I'm interested about going from 10 people to 30 people in 1 year. I mean, that's like getting in your car or on your motorcycle. I'm a motorcycle guy, and just suddenly just revving it up and just go, right? Just juicing it up and just going. That's for a lot of companies, that's sort of a bit of exponential growth in 1 year.
Yeah, and for us, it's really come down to we started getting a lot more interest, not just in Winnipeg, but across Canada and in the US, which has put us in a position where we have a lot of really exciting things on the horizon, but we're going to need to grow the team.
Okay.
And so you'll see, we do have about 8 job positions right now, and that ranges from software developers, sales positions, photographers for the 360-degree content for some of the applications. That's just right now.
Yeah.
And so a year from now, that like with those 8 positions, that'll put us over 20 people.
Yes.
And so that's most of the way to the 30 goal.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, so looking.
It's not
for that
actually
team.
That outrageous when you put it all into perspective.
No, I know, but you know what? I've had a background in. I hope you don't mind talking about this on air because I think this is part of the challenge. So I have a background in the technology industry, and I'm aware of like you can have these very cycles of very rapid growth in the technology industry just based on what's going on, and if any industry, I mean, a lot of industries, the traditional ones, you don't see due to their maturity, you just don't see that. Oh, gee, I just I'm 10 people, I'm now going to be 30 in 12 months. I mean, it's a slower growth pattern.
Yeah, it'd be rare if you manufactured boxes for a living to suddenly need twice as many people in your company to make twice as many boxes unless you sold a huge contract out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, right?
In software, when you develop software for a living, there are no materials. It's very low overhead to run an organization. And really, my biggest cost at Bitspace is talent. It's people. And, we have a pretty good space. We're in the Exchange District here in Winnipeg. We've got the bottom floor of a building, which is pretty cool. We got we call it the dungeon. We don't need a storefront.
You moved.
So you moved. Yeah, we are in the same building as last time you visited me, but
yeah.
We are the basement, and it sounds like a dungeon, but we actually have 12 huge windows, so it's very bright. It's almost too bright sometimes. Yeah. But we've moved into a bigger space to accommodate more people. But that all comes out of the amount, like the density of projects that we're getting, and that can happen to really any startup, and especially in software, it can be fairly unexpected. Yeah. Where it's like, I suddenly need 5 more developers because this project kicked off.
With that thought in mind, when we take a short break, when we talk about some of the development that's happening in the business overall, like in the larger scale, and what's happening with the technology. This is Richard Lanford, set for success. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Daniel Blair. If you don't know Daniel, I think he's a guy you should get to know. So if you're listening in and you own a company or in that, and I know I'm putting that out there, but he's probably one of the guys you should get to know when we're talking about business. Now, just before break, we were talking about development and rapid growth in the technology industry, which just pumps me right up. But the other piece, I think, Daniel, given your space, virtual reality, augmented reality, I'm going to throw in some 3D stuff in there, and you can change the terms as you like. Give us a bit of an update of what kind of toys you're playing with these days. That's the way I'm going to phrase it. What toys you're playing with these days?
Well, there's been some immediate changes in the landscape over this past week. So
over the last
two days ago, Magic Leap, which is an augmented reality head-mounted display, basically released. You can buy the Magic Leap 1. They aren't shipping just yet, but you can purchase it. And it is very similar to the Microsoft HoloLens, which I am not sure you've tried.
I think I came down and visited your space. I might have tried that when I tried a couple of things.
So it's basically a device you wear on your head, and it's like fancy glasses. They look kind of silly, in my opinion, a little steampunkish. but they give you what they call spatial computing capabilities, which means that I can see you. You can see me. I've added a 3D object to the room. Our best example of that is we've added an excavator to the room. It is full size. It is digging. You can walk right up to it, but it's not actually there.
Yeah, okay.
And so the Magic Leap 1, which has been a huge amount of hype around it, it actually has, I think, an unrealistic amount of hype attached to it, which happens quite frequently with this kind of stuff. But they've released the first developer kit to the US only. I am currently working on weaseling my way into getting one. But they promise some pretty big stuff. If you remember any of the hype videos that came out a while ago, there was a video of a whale shooting out of a gymnasium floor and splashing back down. Yeah. That was what they were promising. I will tell you right now, it is nothing like that.
Yeah.
That is an over-exaggeration of what augmented reality is. So that would be on the realm of like the high-tech stuff right now. So working with the Microsoft HoloLens, for example. And we are working on projects, even locally, using that technology. So to augment the real world by adding 3D objects into that space. On the virtual reality front, we've been doing a lot of work right now using what's called the Vive trackers. So when we're creating a simulator using room scale virtual reality, we can add these trackers to real devices that allow us to bring that tool into the virtual world. A really good example of that is the welding simulator that we're working on. So the welding simulator, it was actually developed in the city by previous studios. When it moved into new ownership, it was put into our portfolio. We have since modernized the code base, but we've also added support for custom controllers. So we can add these trackers onto any sort of real world welding tool. So you're learning to weld, and I'm talking like real, like MIG welding, like an actual welding gun. We can take that, put the tracker on it, and you learn in a virtual reality simulation using the actual tool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So that's advanced that technology or that capability. Maybe that's the way better to put it a lot more.
And that's accurate up to a sheet of paper. So it's the tracking on these things is phenomenal. And that can be deployed into training facilities. That can be deployed into trade shows. You know, you want just kids to learn about what it's like to be a welder. Well, here, let them do it. But don't use any materials. Don't wreck any hardware, and don't put anyone in any actual danger. And we've actually made it so that you put on the helmet first. You know, you turn on the machine, you grab the welding gun, which is an actual welding gun, And then as you're welding, you can see your progress. Afterwards, it'll generate you a report card. So it can be used as an actual educational tool.
So then it gives you an idea of whether you've done that a good job. Can you use that also in a similar situation for like driving simulations?
Yes.
I know there's a lot in the media quite recently, over the last few months, and rightly so, about, for example, the training for the trucking industry and also the continued training of people who drive.
So that is a realistic example for us because we are involved in a virtual reality driving simulator, although it is more specifically towards plows. But anything can be emulated in the virtual world. When you start talking about simulations, it starts to be a little bit more expensive than some of the like cheaper VR options. But what you can do is you can emulate weather conditions. You can emulate random events. So a person walked out in front of you. How do you handle that? There's a deer on the road. Like all those kind of things can be emulated in a simulation right now. And you can use things like steering wheels, like that you would see someone playing a racing game with in virtual reality. And with those trackers that I was just talking about, we can know its physical position in the space. So, you know, you're sitting in the cab of a semi-truck. We can train you on how to drive that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unreasonable to assume that you can put a 3D model of a semi cab, so a Peterbilt truck, for example, in the space, have the operator sitting in it, and have all the buttons working with the hands. Like
that's what I was wondering with sort of the technology you're talking about, so that you're actually using the actual physical truck that you'd be driving on the road, as opposed to a mock-up of that truck.
Yeah, so you can do stuff like that. And like that's kind of like the realm of where we're working right now. And a lot of the technology, like you start looking at the Vive Pro. So the Vive is kind of like the premier VR headset. And then with the release of the Vive Pro, you're looking at like a huge improvement in resolution on the lenses. You're looking at a huge improvement in tracking with the 2.0 tracking and a huge increase in trackable space, because now you can have 10 meters by 10 meters tracked by using four sensors as opposed to two. So you could literally track a truck.
Yeah, okay. 10 meters by 10 meters is a pretty big space.
That's a large space. That's the bulk of my office, like the main part of my office. Like we can have one set of sensors and track almost the whole thing.
That's pretty cool. That's actually pretty cool. Is there other technologies? Actually, you know what? I said I might ask some stupid questions, and here might be one. In terms of virtual reality and augmented reality, if it doesn't, let me know, autonomous vehicles or autonomous technology fit into that? Is there a connection?
So there can be. Okay. So with virtual reality, you're watching and interacting with something.
Yes.
With autonomous vehicles, I think you're actually doing the opposite. So for virtual reality to incorporate autonomous vehicles, you would probably be using it as a monitoring tool. So you would like have a 360-degree camera mounted on the roof. You would jump into VR, and then you'd be able to monitor where the car was going.
All right.
So like there'd be that. It could be used for simulations and stuff along those lines, where you could be in VR in the cab of a car, have that car running the same software that the physical car would be doing, and have it run through courses and stuff along those lines. That's where it, in my opinion, gets kind of cool. I don't know how else it would work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But when you think of things like FPV for drones, you could have an autonomous drone and use the FPV to monitor the camera. So that way you're saying fly from this GPS coordinate to this and put on the FPV camera, which is kind of like VR light.
Okay.
And monitor through that.
And monitor that way and just sort of be part of that overall experience with the drone itself too.
Yeah.
You're involved in drones, aren't you? Is that something?
So at North Forest Technology Exchange, I manage the Advanced ICT Lab, which happens to have drones in it.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I have kept quite up to date with all of the going-ons with Transport Canada and the drones and all that. I do own several drones myself. I have a DJI Spark. I have the DJI Inspire, which is a very large drone, and the Spark, like I said, is very small. It actually falls below the threshold for needing to report to Transport Canada if you're going to be flying it. However, it still is applicable to the Class C airspace, which is most of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So there are limitations to flying your drones. I usually go south of the city to fly mine, just because I can get away from most of the restrictions. If you go towards Falcon Lake, my family has land out there, so there's some good spots for me to
fly over there. Yeah, because you got
Drones are awesome. It's definitely like has made flying aerial vehicles like ridiculously simple. However, before people go out and get drones, they should research the restrictions with Transport Canada, because there are a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules.
Just yesterday on the Winnipeg Reddit, someone posted a picture of a drone shot from their house in Charleswood.
Yeah.
That's illegal.
Yeah. And they put it out in public. Yeah. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we can kick off with some drone discussions. I think also it'd be good to talk about maybe what's happening event-wise and career-wise in this whole industry right now. It's Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Daniel Blair of Bitspace Development. He's even wearing a t-shirt. You know, you're the quintessential technology type guy. T-shirt, blue jeans, way you go, right?
When I started my company, I made enough t-shirts that I could wear a Bitspace t-shirt every day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
And always have a clean shirt. So that way, every time I was at an event, someone saw my logo.
Yeah. And it made, it's, you know, I got stories about that when I was in university. You always buy the one thing and buy lots of them, and then you always have something clean. But sorry, that wasn't quite the story we needed, I guess. But I mean, it made sense that you actually have something that you'd wear all the time. Somebody could see your logo. So
yeah, well, it ties into your personal branding, right? Yeah, you want people to know who you are and what you do. So wear the t-shirt, have your Twitter handle on there, have your logo, you know, your domain on the back.
That's actually really good advice. Out of curiosity, I know you're a company of 10 now and that you've moved, I mean, based on what we've been talking about this show, and I am going to come visit you again this summer. Hopefully you're going to be around, but does everybody in your company wear your t-shirts too?
Not everybody at the moment. We, like I said earlier, we are redesigning our logo,
yeah,
and with that comes new t-shirt design. So September, everyone will be wearing Bitspace t-shirts if they so choose. The way that I'm approaching that is, instead of saying, hey, everyone in my company, wear my company t-shirt. There are services that we can put our logo onto a variety of products, and they can kind of pick and choose what they want. So if they'd rather have a polo or they'd rather have a t-shirt or whatever, they can kind of pick and choose, and then we just kind of supply it.
Yeah. I used to own a technology company back in the 90s, one of several. And that's the way we did it too. But we did have, because we were such more of a service-based company at the time, everybody had to wear like we call them polo shirts. I'm not a polo shirt type of guy. I'm a t-shirt, blue jean type guy.
Yeah.
And so I get the technology.
Polos are my dress-up shirt.
That's your dress-up shirt. Exactly.
Important meeting today. Put on my polo.
It's funny you would say that, because I worked for a larger organization at one point in time. I was a senior manager of Global Technology Solutions, and I wore a polo shirt every day to work, and that was my dress-up shirt. If I wanted to look really good, you put a sports jacket over it,
and
you were done. And you ended up working on technology.
And if anyone ever asks, it just looks like you're heading off to a golf tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other, you know.
I've never golfed in my life, by the way.
That's fine. But the interesting thing, I mean, it's, we're talking, I know we're going to talk about some other stuff, but we sort of ended up on this tangent about branding. You know, the interesting thing is that I know for me, I used to go to these meetings and all these suits would be there, which, you know, shirt and tie and everything like this. And I would show up like this. And it was acceptable because I was the technology guy. Right?
That's exactly how it is for me. By design, I am fairly well known as the tech guy that will be wearing the VR hoodie and the sandals all summer. And
best way to dress.
Yeah.
Best way to dress in your business. You and I are both on the same page.
I'm busy building good stuff, not looking super sharp.
There you go. And think about building good stuff. I suspect a lot of training and development and needs to go along with this. And this is one of these things that I always like to talk to you about. Like what should people be considering getting to know?
This is a great time to talk about this stuff, because there are companies moving to town that are hiring. There are growing startup companies that are way bigger than my own. There are companies that are the size of Bitspace that are hiring. There's a lot of jobs being created here right now. And so a lot of people say to me, where can I go to become trained to do these things? Well, if you're thinking about software development, I always recommend either the University of Manitoba's or Winnipeg's computer science program or Red River College's BIT program.
Yeah, of course.
Which I'm a grad from.
Yes.
And they're both good, like the computer science at the universities, so Winnipeg or Manitoba, and the BIT program, they're both good options. They just give you slightly different outlooks on things, whereas with the universities, you end up being more research oriented, and with the colleges, you end up being a little bit more hands-on.
Yeah.
And both are important roles at a company. But there's a lot more to it than just going to school, because that's where people are going to end up. This weekend, which will be in the past for everyone that's finally listening to this, there is what's called a game jam coming up. It is Ludum Dare 42. There is another game jam in the fall that is coming up. And a game jam is a really cool way to just get started with programming. It is free or cheap, depending on which one you go to. And the way that it works is you register, you come down, and you say, I'm going to make a game. That's like step one. Step two is figure out how to make a game. And there's no right or wrong amount of game that you make. And a game can be as simple as, you know, you've got a block moving around on a screen and you try to get into a goalpost. Like, it doesn't have to be complicated. The point of it is learning and figuring out the tools and learning about scripts and meeting people. Because, you know, once you start meeting people, then you start figuring out, like, who can you work with to enhance your skills.
Yeah, you create a community.
Exactly. And, like, community is what really drives this. And, you know, I travel to a lot of cities, but Winnipeg has the best developer community. Because we're the biggest small city, you know, people are friendly. People are willing to work together. We're willing to get together and do these kind of things. And it doesn't feel like you're below other people.
Yeah.
So, you know, the game jams, like my company, Bitspace, we sponsor the game jam. So we're sponsoring the one this weekend. And the reason we do that is to help grow the community, because I like to see people coming together. I like to see new people. I want to see kids. I want to see everyone coming out and building something. And that doesn't have to be an actual thing. I build a lot of things in my spare time. And it's just because I was like curious about whether I could build it or not. It doesn't always become an actual thing. So, you know, whether that's just like an open source script or a little game or whatever, a lot of it is just tinkering, a lot of experimentation. And a game jam is a weekend of tinkering. Mm. But you just also get some free food.
Well, it's always good to get the free food, I guess. I'm just curious, when you talk about having people come out to these things and really the learning experience, do you have to have a background as a programmer to go to one of these things?
Could
you just sort of like not know how to do code at all, but just be somebody who's curious and just want to maybe innovate?
Coding doesn't even necessarily mean that you know how to program either, right? So, you know, just coming out and learning about critical thinking and learning about working in a team, and then keeping in mind that there's more roles in these tech companies than just a programmer.
Yeah.
You know, at Bitspace, we have designers, developers, we've got marketing professionals. Like, there's different roles. And you can work in this industry, in games or programming or technology, and not actually be the developer. I think that's something that people kind of miss sometimes, is they think that like the only valuable role is the programmer, when it's not.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm thinking even your space. I mean, you do a lot of VR for the training world, what it is. But then if you have somebody who may not be a developer or programmer, et cetera, but maybe they have an incredibly creative training background and they understand how training programs to go together, that sounds like that could be something
that's
valuable.
Yeah, that's the most valuable skill for my sales team. Well, it's like, have you worked in training?
Because
you understand that. It's all about domain knowledge.
Yeah.
But like, you know, in regards...
Domain knowledge.
Yeah. And so in regards to like the events and stuff, like, all of the experiences you have are unique to you, and that will give you a unique perspective on what you want to create.
All right.
So it doesn't mean that you have to come down and be, you know, the programmer. You can come down and you can be the designer. You can be the game designer. You can figure out what would the game do, and someone else can code it with
you. Figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And that's really all part about being a team. I often say to my son, who is, you know, he will tell you right now he's nerdy, and he's a technology guy. And I say, you know, it's not always about just staying in your room programming or working with your technology. It's about being part of a team and allowing other skills to come in play. With that in mind, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you and talk a bit more about this kind of stuff, how would they do that?
I always recommend that people go to my Twitter, which is cmdanca, or the company website, bitspacedevelopment.com, and you can get in touch with me through there.
That would be the way to do it. What a show we've been having, Dan. I mean, I always love, Daniel. I said I was going to call you Daniel. But
you can call me whatever you want, man.
My cousin's is Dan, and then there's Danny, and then there's Daniel. So, but I always enjoy having you on. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what might that be?
There are so many opportunities here, whether that is that you want to create something or you want to work in a field that you never thought you could. Winnipeg is a unique place to do that. There are exciting companies that are coming here. There's exciting companies that were started here. The possibilities are limitless for what is coming to Winnipeg.
Awesome. And we're at the center of the country. All right. Go Winnipeg, go Manitoba, go Canada, no doubt. With that in mind, Daniel, thank you for joining me today. I mean, I know you squeezed it in between your trips, so I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's awesome. Always awesome. Always like spending time with you. Listeners, if you have a final thought or an idea or a question for a show, just send it off. I mean, today it was all about technology and virtual reality, augmented reality. We didn't super get into 3D printers or anything. We've had that dialogue in
the
past.
We'll do that next time.
Next time, which is a whole other cool space. But if you want to know more, just connect with me somehow, richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something that's extremely important. Do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.